Gannon, the great ball, opportunity here, it's in! It's Patrick McElhinney!
Here's Hilden! And Hilden gets it!
Would you like to be back, yes?
This is tough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And you're very welcome along to the latest edition of the RTE Soccer Podcast. Lots to chat about from the last week or so. Dundalk 1-0 up in their quest for the treble. Shelburne returning to the Premier Division for the first time since 2013 on this podcast, which is available on several platforms, including Apple, Spotify and many others. We'll hear from former Shelburne manager Alan Matthews, not just Shelburne, but several other clubs as well. Alan Cawley, who played for Shell, so a strong Shells flavour to this particular podcast. And we'll get some pearls of wisdom from RTE Online's Rob Wright. And James O'Toole is also with us. Hi, guys.
Thanks.
Hi, Adrian.
Let's start with hits and misses. In fact, well, hits and misses will be sprinkled right throughout this podcast. I'm going to start with my hit of the last week. Alan, I think you were there. Alan Cawley, that is. Alan Matthews, you may well have been there as well. Dublin 5 in a row. And the lads are doing their post-match interviews on the pitch. And Damien O'Mara is chatting away to Cormac Costello. And Dermot Connolly, Dublin's prodigal son, wanders up in the middle of the interview and says, Shells are on the up.
He did indeed. Fair play to him.
I don't know if you heard it. And Cormac Costello revealed that himself and Dermot Connolly are diehard and long-suffering Shelburne fans. So I thought it was a lovely moment as Dermot Connolly was probably more delighted about Shelburne winning promotion than perhaps winning five in a row. But there you go.
I think he was a good footballer, Adrian. I think he went on trial to Leeds.
Is that right?
Yeah. He either played for Home Farm or Stella Maris. But yeah, from what I can gather, he's a good footballer.
What position?
Front man, I believe, midfield player stroke front man, but I think he went on trial to Leeds.
He's all the physical attributes anyway. He's in some shape. He's and
decent athletic player, I believe, when he was a kid. And had he, you know, chosen to go down the soccer route, you never know what would have happened. But Vincent's, I think, was his first love. Ger Brennan, another Dublin stalwart. I just think another avid Shelburne fan.
There you
go. Of course, Philly McMahon was involved with Shamrock Rovers a couple of years ago, and most recently with Bohemians through his connections there.
And of course,
Jason,
don't forget
Sherlock,
the
Jason,
singing goalkeeper, J-O. Josh Moran,
who's the goalkeeping
coach to the Dubs.
And I met Josh actually at the game for Locker and was chatting to him, and he was filling me in a little bit about the Dubs and behind the scenes, you know, when you're quizzing them about stuff going on and what it's like in the camp. And he couldn't speak highly enough of those lads.
Absolutely
phenomenal.
They're exceptional. You hear snippets, as you say, but you just look at the way they conduct themselves on and off the pitch. They're a credit to everything that they do, really.
And Josh's role is as a goalkeeping coach, I presume?
He's a goalkeeping coach for Dublin, has been for the last 3 years,
I think.
He's
done a bad job at Cluxton, so.
He's done well, and, you know, he'd a good guy to work with, and I think he's certainly given a couple of good tips and structures, I suppose, for improving. Cluxton has been exceptional for Dublin. And even the save he made the other day, I've seen Jim Gavin actually reference it in his post-match. The day after the drawn game, Josh and the three goalkeepers were off training. They spent a couple of hours working on angles, working because they weren't happy with the goal that they conceded in the first game. So Josh is bringing a bit of soccer nuance to GAA, which is brilliant.
As Radley was saying, he was working, like specifically looking at his footwork and moving how he approached moving out from the goal line and stuff like that. It was very interesting to hear the way they were analysing it.
He gave me a good synopsis of it, really. He says in football, soccer, like everything comes from the deck or the odd header, whereas from Gaelic everything is coming from the middle, is kicking the ball out of your hands, particularly if you're going to try and come in and save a shot, a guy's coming in at you. So the angle and the height of the ball is completely different to soccer, but he was able to bring some of that technique to the fore, and it has certainly helped, I think.
And I was listening to Kevin McStay. This sounds like the RTE GAA podcast. We'll get into the soccer in a moment. Kevin McStay at the weekend making the point that Stephen Cluxton analysed the goal he conceded, Killian Spillane's goal in the drawing game, that his footwork, that he didn't react quickly enough to the shot, and he basically analysed it over and over again. Which anyway,
just ignore me. So
we'll move on. My miss of the week: Derry City missing out on the League Cup on penalties. Declan Devine was absolutely—he was a ball of energy on the sideline. But Dundalk coming through to win on penalties 6-5, 2-2 at the end of 90 minutes. Derry must be wondering what they have to do to get one over on Dundalk. But congratulations must go to Dundalk. So one up in the quest for the treble. And Rob Wright, that particular game on Saturday night forms one of your misses of the week.
It does, and it's a miss in the very real term. It's Robbie Benson's penalty miss. It's probably one of the worst penalties you'll ever see in your life. It was the penalty to win the cup. You know, he scores that penalty, they lift the cup. So it's hard to really see what he was thinking. I think he was trying to Panenka. And he takes a slow stuttering run up, but it's kind of the style. You know, he's walking, he's running, he's walking. He gets to the ball, he nearly hops. He strikes the ball almost in midair and it just trickles back to the goalkeeper. It's a shocker. Yeah. Absolute shocker.
And it was at the time a penalty to win it. And of course, eventually they did win it, albeit in sudden death.
Yeah, and there's a picture online as well. I don't know if you saw it afterwards. There's seven or eight of them. Like, obviously, just at the moment when they won it. So the players, you know, the reaction from that centre circle, and they're all, I suppose they're all making a sprint for the goalkeeper. And Robbie Benson is just like arms crossed, just looking like he could be anywhere else in the world.
I think his eyes are actually closing. It looks like he's asleep, you know.
Yeah. Tough one to lose it on if they'd have lost it.
Well, it's one of them, Al, isn't it? If you're going to try that, you have to score. Like, you have to score because you'll never, ever live it down, ever. And if you were the manager and he tried that and they end up losing it, it would take a lot, I'd say, to forgive him.
Carnage.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be carnage.
As a manager, Al.
It really would. You can say all the right things, but ultimately, to lose a game like that for I don't know what you'd call it, arrogance, petulance. I don't know what you'd call it, because he's a brilliant player
and he's a great lad. Attitute. Like, he's not an arrogant lad.
Absolutely. It totally, it's not his character to do something like that. And if he scored, you know,
as a dirty
player, coach, manager, he'd be absolutely frustrated. And that's being kind if you're beaten on a penalty like that. So it ended up okay for them, but you're right. I think he'd have been walking straight off.
I'm going to stand up here for Robbie. I don't think he means it. I think he just gets his feet wrong and he kind of slides into it as he's moving towards the ball. If you look at the way he strikes the ball, he actually strikes it almost on top of the ball. And I think he just gets his feet wrong as he goes up to it.
Yeah,
I don't think
he's meaning to do it. Maybe change his mind. He was going to do what he wasn't going to do.
I don't think he actually meant to do a Panenka, as they would say. I think he just wrong.
I suppose from Vinny's point of view as well, like, Vinny was maybe under a bit of pressure that coming after the first chance for winning a trophy, and it's a great chance because you're in the final, even though I know they're well ahead in the league and it looks like they will win that, but that's your first trophy on the board.
Yeah.
Imagine losing for a penalty like that.
Having really dominated and pushed on and getting, you know, coming back a couple of times in the game and really dominating the extra time, dominating the last half an hour of the game when they were really on top. They probably should have won the game in normal or extra time anyway. And the fact that it went to penalties, if they lost it in that regard.
Yeah, that is the point, isn't it, James? Because you're a Derry fan. Grant Gillespie sent off after 57 minutes, was backs to the wall for Derry for long stretches of the game. But you've been on the podcast for the last few weeks, and every time we mentioned the potential treble for Dundalk, you squirmed because you said they can't do it because Derry are the only side in 1989.
30 years now.
Yeah, how are you feeling? You know, they're looking good for two of the three.
On Saturday night, as the game was being played, Derry realistically shouldn't be within an arm's length of Dundalk in any game. There's no chance Derry should be running Dundalk. That's four very, very close games.
4-2-2s, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've got them like in the FAI Cup, out with minutes left in the game to a header by a former Derry City player. Actually, if you look at the team that Dundalk put out, I think there's four ex-Derry City players on that team. So it just shows, and in fairness to Derry, they shouldn't have been anywhere near. Penalties shouldn't have happened. Extra time probably shouldn't have happened. The sending off just shows how clever Dundalk are. Because Gillespie goes in for a tackle, doesn't get anywhere near the player. The player dives, and there's no question. He doesn't clip the player.
It's not a dive, James.
Oh, it is. He dives, Alan.
It's not a dive in the...
He's jumping before Gillespie even tries to make a tackle.
No, it's not a dive in the sense that he's trying to con anyone. It's a dive in the sense that he's jumping out of the way to tackle because he's going to get hurt otherwise. The lad comes in to do... It's the most ridiculous tackle.
Yeah, maybe.
He's just after being booked, Gillespie. The team... And for mouthing in the first place,
which is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Ridiculous. A bit like Sean Brennan.
You're up against it anyway. Against Dundalk, who were the best team, as we all know. You need all your men on the pitch. You might need Dundalk to have an off night if you're going to beat them. And then he goes and does something as stupid as the mouthing, and then he dives into a tackle. And Jamie McGrath is not a type of player to dive. He's jumping out of the way of a fella jumping.
But then again, as I said, they're very, very close to them. As you said, like, you're inviting that pressure on. But at no stage did Derry, like, Derry, I was over the moon with the Derry performance, I have to say. We shouldn't have been anywhere near Dundalk. at the end of the day, and I'll tell you, beyond decisions like that all the time, and a manager must do your head in, especially as you said, his first yellow card is a nonsense.
The two
yellow
of them
card.
Are nonsense.
And the Dundalk lads have proven themselves to be extremely well-versed at managing those kind of situations.
Yeah, exactly.
They're clever, they're streetwise, and it's part of the game. And they have, over the last couple of years, experience. They've, you know, become hardened in that regard. And Jamie McGrath's in an environment now where he's learned that. I don't think he dived. I think he got out of the way, absolutely. But they would have been aware he's on yellow
absolutely.
And he's liable to do something here. Box clever.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got side of it.
It's my miss as well, Adrian. That's my miss, that lad, because, as I said, like, you're in a cup final. Derry have been absolutely brilliant. I think Declan Devine's done a marvellous job since he's gone in. They're still in with a great shout of getting third. It looked like the good times are back, the brandy well packed. He's brought that good feel back to the place. And he has a very decent team. And I think you're looking at them potentially as a team that could even go on further if he was to recruit again in the off-season. And there's definitely huge potential and something to build on there with them. And for the lad to do that, and you don't want to be too critical of any player, but for mouthing in the first place, you can nearly say, and even then, that's the chance for the lad to say, okay, that's stupid of me, I better be careful now for the next few minutes, and we're in this game, I need to give myself every opportunity of staying in the game. And he goes and does a stupid tackle like that a few minutes later.
It was reckless.
It was great to see, in fairness, to, like, as you said, the lads are only in there 7 months now. Declan and the backroom staff are only there 7 months. But you see some of the young lads he's brought up, like Jack Malone coming on, taking a penalty, unfortunately misses it, but he had, at least he stood up to take the penalty. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And your little Kieran Harkin as well, young lad. And it's good to see that some of the under-19s, under-17s are in and around the periphery of the squad, which is good for the future.
They're a good side. They're a good side. I've seen them a number of times this year. They're a good side.
Yeah.
They've run Dundalk. I've seen them run Dundalk very close up in Oriel. They've come to Inchicore. They've been good. They've come to Tala. I've seen them. They're a good side, and they'll get better if Declan can bring in the right bodies in the off season. They'll be strong next year.
We spent a lot of time there on Derry. Credit, huge credit must go to Dundalk, to Vinnie Perth, his first piece of silverware as manager. And as we mentioned at the outset, possibly the first of a treble. Terrific achievement by him, because he's got all kinds of pressures as well there. It's not plain sailing when you're manager of a big club like Dundalk.
Well, the expectation is there. And it's brilliant for Vinny, because he's worked really hard to put his own stamp on this team. They had a very, very tough start to the season. They were a number of points behind Rovers. They fixed that. And they've progressed in all cup competitions. And even going up to the Brandywell, it was a tough one. It could have been played in Oriel Park. They lost the flip of the coin and it ends up going up to the Brandywell. So that's a tough ask. I don't know if they went up Friday, but presume they went up on the day of the match to keep it as routine as best they can. Huge expectation to go and achieve the first part of the treble. And they played quite well. But Derry put it up to them. And it's always awkward. And it goes to a penalty situation. And it's, you know, you're experience that they've had in Europe and experience that they've had in big games probably told in the end of the course of the game and then into the penalties that they deserve to win it. And from him, from his point of view, it's just the first ticked off, really, because Vinny certainly would have targeted the league and all other competitions. I think the league, as Alan says, will be achieved in the next couple of weeks. But to achieve the first one, and that's his first one as a manager on his own merit, he deserves great credit and the crew that he has there for actually continuing the good work that was done before.
Yeah, because Adrian, I have two hits, and that's one of my hits is Vinny getting over the line, I suppose, because as you say, there's a lot to contend with there. I know people might argue and say that might be silly thing to say because you're taking over the best team. But to continue that on and the success, and he played a huge part initially with Stephen Kenny as well, and that shouldn't be ruled out. But for him to take over as the manager, you could almost see the relief afterwards of him jumping around with the cup. It brought me back to even the pressure they were on when they beat Riga and the same thing, he was over the moon after that. Because there is pressure on him. Like when you're with the best team, you have to deliver the trophies, and if you don't, you'll be seen. And the first thing people will throw at him, oh, Stephen Kenny's gone now. That's not the reason. That's why they haven't won or whatever. So to get his first one, that's my hit as well.
You said there you have a second hit.
Yeah, the second one was it's across the water. Actually, I was only catching up a match of the day last night, and
Firmino.
Probably the best 1-2 I've ever seen in my life. And
I saw you tweeting about that.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And sometimes you watch match of the day and. I don't know, it can be a bit hit and miss and the way things are gone with football nowadays. But I watched last night and there seemed to be goals everywhere and great goals. But certainly Firmino's performance, he came on after I think it was 35 minutes, and he was doing things that you'd see people doing in the Phoenix Park.
Like, you need super slow mo to really appreciate that.
The kind of stuff I used to do in Alan Matthews and stopped me from doing it.
Car parks.
He wouldn't let me do it. But it was he did. There was a couple of things. Robertson played one and he scooped it over a fella's head and puts it in. There was another one he flicked around the corner, a little back flick. But then the one with Salah where it plays into him, two people around him. He does this little trick back to Sal and he goes in and scores. It was just phenomenal.
A double roll, wasn't it? Rolls it with his right. Unreal. And flicks it back with his left.
Absolutely.
As I said, you need super slow to really appreciate it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I was sitting there last night watching it and jumped out of my seat. It was amazing.
Yeah, super. Reminded you of yourself, did it?
Something like that.
I think people are starting to realise just how important he is to Liverpool as well. Like, he is probably their most... Well, he is their most important attacking player. And it wasn't really until he came on with Origi going off that they looked like Liverpool. And then people, you know, he does so much work as the first defender as well. Yeah, he is...
He's almost does like, loads of donkey work. Yeah, you're right.
He's
Rob,
an attacking defender. And he's the first man in on the backs when they have the ball. He runs endlessly. I think people are starting to realise just how important he is to Liverpool.
Good shout. Well done, Alan. And we move on. Quite a night at United Park on Friday. Shelburne went to Drogheda looking for a win to secure the title and promotion. Drogheda, well, they had a chance to keep the title race alive until the last day of the season, which, of course, is next weekend, next Saturday night. Not to be. Shells won on the night by 3-1. Amongst the big crowd there, our own reporter, Mike McCartney.
The Shelburne supporters arrived in big numbers, full of confidence.
We're very, very optimistic. Hopefully we're going to win it. But it's got to be very tight. There'll be a few goals in it.
So within a couple of hours, you expect to see Shelburne on their way?
I hope so. We should have done it before now, but unfortunately we have to do it now tonight. It's going to be hard.
It's going to be a nip and tuck game. It's hard to know, to be honest. Hopefully we didn't waste our journey up to Drogheda and it comes away. Even a draw, I'd take a draw right now.
Very, very close. Hopefully it's Shelburne. I think we'll just scrape it.
Needless to say, Drogheda were not there just to make up the numbers.
Well, I hope it'll be a win for us for Drogheda United tonight. Our lads aren't under so much pressure as Shells are because they're already top of the division. So hopefully we'll go our way tonight.
1-0 to the Drogs. Bit nervous now.
Shelburne applied the pressure from an early stage with a series of corners from Larkin Fitzgerald. But Stephen Meaney would come close for the home side in 24 minutes and Luke McNally headed a corner just wide of the post 12 minutes later. Sean Brennan's corner kick in injury time in the first half gave Shelburne anxious moments. We're in the last minutes of injury time. The party has already started. I'm done with the Shelburne fans. Aidan Friel put them ahead in the 64th minute. There was an equaliser from Drogheda, from Luke McNally. In the 81st minute, Oscar Brennan put Shells back in front. And then Larkin Fitzgerald put it out of touch. It's all over! It's all over! And Shelburne are back in the Premier Division! Team captain on the night and goal scorer, Larkin Fitzgerald. Larkin, take me through that winning goal. I mean, it was 2-1. It was the last minute of normal time. Anything could have happened.
Yeah, the ball just broke and I don't do many anymore coming with my age. But I just made a run for it and I seen that it was on. So I shouted to Killers. Lucky enough, he sort of see me, squared it to me and I knew it was there when the ball broke. It was only one player that was going to get there. And luckily it went in. Seal the deal.
One up after, 64 minutes, then came the equaliser and you thought to yourself, oh my God, here we go again.
Yeah, we don't make it easy for ourselves at Shelburne. But listen, we got the result we wanted at the end of the day. We're up now. The fans can enjoy themselves. They've worked tirelessly all year. Same with the players and the staff. And listen, I couldn't be happier.
This time last year, Ian Morris was a player at Bohemians. He was appointed manager of Shelburne last November. Is he surprised at how fast everything has happened?
It's been a whirlwind of over 12 months, but it's been topped off tonight with the best possible feeling. Unbelievable. You see the look on them fans, the supporters' faces today, and just every one of them is just over the moon. They're elated, and that was for all them tonight.
And that report from Mike McCartney. Alan Cawley, I know you're on duty at Dalyman Park for the Bowes Waterford game, but I'm sure you're keeping close tabs on events at United Park. delighted for Shelburne?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's why I didn't put in as one of the hits, because I knew we were coming to it, Adrian. It's brilliant news. Myself and Stewie were obviously following it non-stop, looking at the phone and the scores coming in. And yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. And it probably got to the stage for Morris where there was so much expectation on them at the start of the season, with obviously the investment that was brought in. People thought it was going to be a bit of a cakewalk, that they'd run away with it. And the closer it was getting to the end, it's always hard to get over the line, no matter how good you are, really. But Drogheda were putting serious pressure on them. And I know it was a really tough game to go up there. And Drogheda have done unbelievable work themselves on a considerably low budget compared to Shelburne also. But for them to get over the line, I'd say Morris is absolutely over the moon. And I think it's good for the league in general, because there's a lot of discussion and debate around where this league is going now at the moment and the direction it's going. And you'd love to think you have a rejuvenated, vibrant Shelburne in a new look League of Ireland or whatever is going to happen down the line. So yeah, all credit to Morris and everybody. I know people expected that they would do it anyway, but it's not as easy as that. So for him to get the job done and get over the line, huge credit to them all.
Yeah, Alan Matthews, because of course you managed there and...
Yeah,
synonymous with the club over the last few years.
It's a really good achievement, as Alan says. I think they were 7-1, or 1-7 rather, to go up. But that's easier said than done. They brought in some really good players, but it shows you how competitive it is in the first division at the top end of it. And they worked really, really hard to get themselves into a position where they had it in their own hands with two games to go. Gone up to United Park to a resurgent Drogheda, who have, you know, again got themselves right into the mix. To come away with a 3-1 victory, great testament to the players. And some of those lads, they were there when I was there, the likes of Conan Bourne, Larkin Fitzgerald. They've given great service to that football club. And it's, you know, it's good to see them still at it, still doing their stuff and still able to get results. A lot of hard work went on behind the scenes. I know they got a new owner, I suppose, in last year, and they brought Ian Morris in. But there's still people like Joe Casey, Colin Murphy, still working behind the scenes there, Eamon White, who've given Trojan service to that football club. And as Alan says, coming back into the Premier Division next year, they'll add good support. They'll add good atmosphere around the grounds. When we came up the last time when I was there, our first league game was against Sligo, Adrian. You may have been doing the match. The ground was sold out and the kickoff was delayed because of the amount of people coming to it. So they'll bring an awful lot of vibrant support and interest around the big Dublin derbies. And it's good to have a club like Shells back in the Premier Division. Great, I have to say, a great work done by Tim Clancy and Kevin Doherty in getting Drogheda to push them as far as they have. And hopefully you could see Drogheda coming up as well.
Unquestionably a great news story, and people have a soft spot for Shelburne because of their achievements back in the 2000s and of course the late Ollie Byrne. But James O'Toole, just playing devil's advocate for a moment, if I may, it's another Dublin-based club that will be in the Premier Division, and we look at the playoff situation. Drogheda United could quite easily be promoted at the expense of Finn Harps, and then once again that the Premier Division would be increasingly lopsided in favour of the East Coast and Dublin in particular. Is that a worrying thing?
No, I don't think so. I think you have to be the best team in the league to come out of it. And if you're the best team, you're the best team. It doesn't matter where you're geographically located. It's just one of those things. Like, do you know what I mean? You just, they were the best team. They've shown they're the best team. Friday night was an absolute cracking occasion. I am actually looking forward to Shells being in the Prem. And the reason I am is that if this ground share with Bohemians comes ahead in the next year or so, it makes it better that both are in the Prem instead of one being in the first and one being in the Prem. And you can just picture, like you've seen the cup game, what have you. Shelburne versus Bowes next year is going to be jammers. It'd be like what we have at the moment, Bowes versus Rovers. I think it's going to be great. I think the football they'll bring will be very, very good. And you could possibly, as well, actually, to make it even more East Coast for you, Cabin Teely could possibly get out of that as well instead of Drogheda.
Yeah, so great achievement as well by them to make the top four. Yeah,
I think with Drogheda as well, like, they deserve huge credit because the lads are working off a shoestring, really.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin and Tim, and it's not... this is the second season as well. People might have thought last year was a flash in the pan. If you remember, they were right up there last year as well. And for them to come back, I know there was a lot of talk at the start of the season. Tim could have been managing Shelburne. And he might have been in this position, but he stayed loyal to Drogheda as well and wanted to finish off whatever job they're doing there. And here they are doing it again. So the consistency they've showed over the 2 years, I think, is brilliant. And Kevin, obviously, with him. And I'd love to see Drogheda. I know sometimes it can be hard. They're probably feeling deflated because that was almost like a cup final situation the other night. But if they go back and regroup, they certainly have the team capable of going on and getting through the playoff system and going on and, I think, even beating Finn Harps. And I'd love to see, because of the work they've done, not just this year, but last year as well, then be rewarded and get up as well.
Yeah, we think about it, and we're talking during the cup final, you're talking about it as a cup final, we talked about the cup final earlier about Gillespie sending off. It's another sending off in this that kind of dampens down the whole game, and a silly sending off at that.
As a manager, absolutely, yeah. And Tim would have prepared his team for all eventualities, including going down to 10 men, what we'll do. But you wouldn't expect your skipper and your most experienced player to get himself sent off.
And another one, Al Mouting as well.
Silly. You know, silly. And Sean, it's a good lad, played for Shelbourne as well. He'll know that he's a bit to give back, I think, in the next couple of weeks. And I think, again, I would imagine it'll be UCD who will go down and it's Shells who will replace them. And I think for the league, I think that's not a bad
swap.
Flip.
That's one good, well supported Dublin club replacing a poorly supported Dublin club, you know, so they're not really losing too much. And then I think if Drogheda do come up, then it's close to the 10 teams you'd want up there, really, you know. It's
one little thing as well, sorry Rob, even while we're on the Drogheda thing, because I saw the chairman tweeting about it last night. They play their last game this week.
Yeah, against.
And it's a month before they play the playoff. And he has to keep the keep the show on the road, funds to pay the players. I know I say they're working off a limited budget, but they still have to come up with the funds to play them. So they have a month of just hanging around and training and waiting around. Like, why is it the delay of a month?
I don't understand it. I think
I know
this
they're
is
probably waiting for the Premier and the lads to
finish. It's to finish out the Premier and see who finishes bottom. And
but again, 2 years ago, they changed the FAI Cup to certain weekends, didn't they? So that meant that if you were knocked out of the FAI Cup early, you could possibly go 3-4 weekends without playing a game because of the way the FAI Cup is. And
if they still haven't got it right, Jim. Adrian, as we spoke last year, if you remember, and I think Sligo have been hit with it this year. 11 weeks last year, Sligo didn't have a home game.
The pre-plan and the fixtures. But this stuff, here we have the First Division finishing next week, and a month is too long to be waiting around.
It's definitely too long. But again, you've got a semi-final weekend in there where they wouldn't have been playing. They didn't play last weekend either. So you're in, out, kind of. And
it's difficult to keep it going.
There's nothing consistent about it, and that's probably
both on and off the pitch to keep it going.
Yeah, that's it. You need consistency, and I'm sure you'd know Al trying to keep fellas.
It's very
motivated.
Difficult. Yeah, you've got to, you know, give them a bit of time off and then come back in. Are you going to play a couple of games behind closed doors to keep things going? Gives you a chance to get injuries fixed up, but you need matches. You need a game to come every week or so. You need to keep that momentum going. Mm. And particularly, the first thing Tim will want to do, and Kevin, get back on the pitch, get a game, get that match against Shells out of the way. They're playing the weekend, which is fine, but they're in second now. I think they're guaranteed second. Yeah. So they are going to be waiting to see, is it long for the Camatilla to play? It's not right. Not right.
Well, lots of goals on Friday night in the First Division. 24, in fact, in the five games. We mentioned there, obviously, Shells winning 3-1 at Drogheda. Cabinteely 3-1 winners over Athlone Town, 2 in that game from Kieran Marty Waters. Big win for Galway United. They trail Cove Ramblers at half-time by a goal to nil, but hit 7 in the second half. 4 of them from Mark Ludden. Limerick were 4-1 winners over Wexford. And Longford beaten at home by Bray Wanderers by 2-1. Dean Williams with a late penalty there for Bray Wanderers. Let's go back to the Premier Division. Alan Cawley, we mentioned you were at Dalyman Park. Bowes 1, Waterford 2. And I didn't get to see the game in full. I saw some of your analysis afterwards. But a very good game. Terrific winner from Tom Holland for Waterford. But a late controversial moment in the game as well. Handball by Kevin Lynch as James Talbot, the Bowes keeper, went forward for a last-ditch free kick, which was swung in by Ross Tierney. And as was mentioned afterwards, if VAR was in operation, then Bowes might have got a draw.
Adrian, I heard that mentioned as well, the VAR. We're a million miles from VAR. We can't even sort out fixtures. Will you never mind VAR?
We can dream of it.
We have vans. We have a van. A chipper van. That's the nearest we get to VAR.
I heard some people suggesting that, but let's sort out a million other issues before we think about VAR, Adrian. But we were obviously in there. It was a great game. Really good game. It was probably one of the best Premier Division games now I've seen in a long time. Even in terms of, I know this might sound a ridiculous thing to say, but just in terms of the intensity alone, I've been at loads of games where they've just been far below the level I would expect the Premier Division game to be in terms of the intensity. But the two teams went at it hammer and tongs right from the start. And I think, to be fair, both started very well. Waterford scored a goal against the run of play, really. James Talbot looked like he slipped and he kind of scrambling across his goal and it hits...
Luke Wade-Slater.
It was Luke Wade-Slater and goes in, yeah. And Waterford then got huge confidence from that and kicked on. Zach Elbezetti had a great chance. They probably should have went 2-0 up. But Bowes came back into it then towards the end of the half. And obviously got themselves the goal just after half-time. They started the second half really well. In particular, young Ross Tierney played really, really well. Showed loads of energy in midfield. He was absolutely brilliant on the night. I was very impressed with him. And there was another lad, 17, young Devoy, was very good too.
Dawson, back from Watford.
Really good, yeah. And then it was all Bowes for the second half. Once they scored, you could see only them winning it and Waterford were kind of camped in their own box. But then they got one breakaway and Tom Holland with a brilliant finish. And that moment right at the end, Adrian, yeah, looking back on it, I just felt, to be fair to Neil Doyle, he was in a position where he was behind the players and it was very hard to see because as James Talbot is heading the ball towards the goal, Kevin Lynch does put his hand across him and blocks it. But for the referee to see that, I felt it would have been very, very hard. And I'd be the first one to criticise a ref or say if I felt it was a pen. But I just thought that was a hard one for him to spot. And sometimes I'd always look for players' reactions and they did remonstrate quite strongly and they've always felt it was. But maybe if Neil Doyle is unsure, that's why he doesn't give it. So that's the only kind of thing I can come up with on that one. But it was a great game, a really good game.
Well, St. Pat's couldn't take advantage of that slip up by Bowes in the race for third place. They were held to a scoreless draw by UCD at Richmond Park. Here's the recently appointed Pats manager, Stevie O'Donnell.
You know, I just think our standards need to be better. You know, the boys have been brilliant the last couple of weeks and in training and that, but it's just a case of getting our standards higher, you know, probably better quality on the ball. And when teams come to Richmond, getting them penned in.
A couple of those offsides looked particularly tight, especially the ones in the second half.
Yeah, I'd have to watch it again, but, you know, a couple of them were sort of borderline, but, you know, these things happen. We're not going to use that as an excuse. You know, we just have to be doing better, particularly second half. We have to be doing better, dominating the game more and, you know, really not leaving it up to marginal offside decisions to go your way.
Overall, how satisfied are you with aspects of the performance or what are the particular positives you can take away from tonight, maybe aside from the fact that you only got 1 point?
We had some decent passages of play, but as I said, on the whole, we'd be looking for more from the group, from the team. You know, as I said, I want teams to come here to Richmond and really be penned in and really, you know, say this is a nightmare place to come. So, you know, I don't think UCD are going away thinking that after tonight, so that's the level we need to get to. As I said, you know, we have good footballers, we're going to have nice passages of play, but, you know, we got to ram home that advantage when we have it and just basically have more control of the game.
What was the rationale behind the changes tonight, particularly the change of goalkeeper, which caught a lot of people's eye?
No, it's my duty as manager, I suppose, going forward to next season. I have to give every player in the squad, you know, a good chance. You know, it's very hard to judge players just off training, so every player in the squad has been told that they're going to get a chance between now and the end of the season, and it's my duty as manager going forward next year to see what players I have at my disposal in the squad, and the only way you can judge them properly is on a match day.
Is there a balance for you between trying to ingrain what you want from this squad, obviously towards the tail end of this season, and the race for a high up the table finish as is possible? Obviously the Bohemians result tonight must be a bit of a sucker punch that you've not managed to capitalise.
Yeah, but look, you gotta look long term. I've come into the job a week ago, so it's my job now to ascertain what the squad is like, what I have. And as I said, the only way you see that is on a Friday night. So players are going to get chances, and you know, you gotta look bigger picture and see what you've got. You don't want to be not seeing half the players. You're picking the same team every week, and then you're letting players or whatever things happen with players that, and you haven't even given them a good chance to show themselves.
Well, that's Stephen O'Donnell at the showgrounds. It finished Sligo Rovers 3, Finn Harps 1, Niall Watson, Ronan Murray with a cracking goal for Sligo, his first for the club, and Sam Ward opening up a 3-0 advantage before the interval. Harry Ascroft with a late consolation goal for Harps, who had manager Ollie Horgan banished to the stands in the second half.
Not good enough first half. You know, Sligo were fully deserving. They showed a bit of quality in the first half there, the likes of, you know, Ronan Murray, Ronan Coughlin, and that was a difference to their credit. And they were short a lot of players too, which is a huge credit to the panel they have had. Look, they're on a high. To be fair to them in the cup semi final, we're the opposite end. You know, the confidence is low, as you can see. We were turned over at home last week, but we got to turn it. To be fair, in the second half, while you could say the game was over, we it's just a pity we couldn't have scored earlier. We had a great chance to get back to 3-1. It'd be interesting then to see what happened. But the better side won. They were excellent in the first half, and well done to them.
You were sent to the stands during the course of the second half. Yeah. Can you tell us the background to that?
No, maybe you can. I've actually spoken to the officials there, and they're very courteous to ask me in. It was a booking and a three-out against one of our players. They reckon that I complimented the referee. Not quite sure what they meant. Obviously, I don't do cynicism well, if that's what they mean. But, you know, the day of foul and abusive language and stuff, you know, when they don't send you off for that, they find another way. But to give them credit, they were courteous enough to explain what they did afterwards. Others don't.
And are you happy with their explanation?
Absolutely not.
Good old Ollie there. I got himself into a spot of bother.
Great question, Adrian. Are you happy? That great question.
Yeah. And a great answer as well, Adam.
Brilliant. Absolutely, Asher. When you mentioned Aaron in the report, I saw the pictures of him in the stand. And when you mentioned he banished to the stands, I'm just thinking, how many times has Ollie been banished to the stands now?
He lives in the stands.
He's better off starting in the stand and making his way down to the dugout.
It'll be interesting to see what level of ban comes from this particular altercation with the officials. Ollie's a great fella, and he's totally passionate about his team and about Finn Harps and about the league. And he doesn't let himself down. What he sees is what he says. What he sees, really. And he's an easy target at times for referees. Mm. He's an easy target for people to make.
Why do you say that?
Because he's so passionate and upfront about it. And maybe I wouldn't say it's the red mist. He just comes out and says what he sees, and is, you know, a lot of the time I think he has a fair point. And maybe, as you said there, he's well spoken, he's an educated man. If people maybe treated him with a little bit more civility, he mightn't blow off as much as he does. But I think it's his makeup, the way he is. And as I say, I think he's targeted, but I'd say they've got his number, his card marked.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm a huge fan of Ollie. I think he's great character.
Good
fella. And in a time, not just in our league, in all leagues, where characters, I think, are missed from the game in certain aspects, I think Ollie's great. And it's not just that he's a character. He's obviously done a brilliant job with Finn Harps. He's fighting fires year after year, trying to keep them in a Premier Division.
Yeah, gets
it's very
them
hard.
Up, fights to keep them up. Yeah, exactly.
I see him. I'm at matches every week. And who do you bump into? Only Ollie Horgan does his homework. It can't be easy getting from Ballybuffet to Dublin, watching games, trying to manage a team, keep the whole show on the road. I'd be a big fan of Ollie as well.
I think he's excellent. I think he's an absolute character. I think himself and Hegsy as well on the bench, probably the two calmest men you can have managing the team, let's be honest.
You haven't really seen Hegsy in full flow this year because Ollie's there in front of him.
It was quite surprising, actually, that Hegsy was the one that jumped in and kind of stopped Ollie going any further at the fourth official and kind of went, yeah, just go down the tunnel there.
I'll deal with it.
Rob, exactly. What did you make of, before we heard from Ollie there, we heard from Stephen O'Donnell, and Demi was talking about the possibility of making Europe, but he's suggesting that he's going to use the next couple of weeks to try out players. He brought Barry Murphy in between the sticks on Friday night. Many of us would feel that, you know, there's an opportunity to push on and perhaps claim Europe for St. Pat's, but you get the sense from the way he was chatting to Damien Amar in that interview that it's more about next season and bigger picture stuff as regards his view on Pat's this season.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the table now, they're still right in the mix, especially when you consider that, like, fourth place is quite possibly going to be enough to get you a place in Europe next season with the FAI Cup up for grabs, the FAI Cup spot up for grabs. If they'd have beaten UCD, they'd be level on points with Bowes ahead of Derry. You know, they're really right in the mix. I think it's too early to be mixing and changing and, you know, experimenting with one eye on this season. There's plenty to play for this season before they get there yet.
Mm. It's hard to believe, really, because I think Pat's, and again, I was a big fan of Harry. I'm disappointed it didn't work out for him there. And they have been very hit and miss, but they're still only 2 points off. They're 47 points at the moment, 2 points off Bowes in third, and they're level on points at Derry with the game in hand. So it is all to play for, as Rob said. And you would expect four to get you into league. Now, I'm not saying that because Sligo Rovers are going to win the cup, so forget about that, Rob. But you would think fourth, you have a very good chance of finishing fourth, that you will get into Europe. So there's still a hell of a lot.
There's an awful lot to play. You're right, Alan. I think, Adrian, what Stephen is saying is, having spoken to him and chatted about it. There's an awful lot to play, but as a new manager coming in, he's going to give everybody a chance to show him that they are good enough to get into the team, that they can play to the standard that he's talking about. And he's talking about improving standards and everything. So to be fair to that, he has to give people an opportunity. And I think that drives competition. The team played quite well for the first half an hour the other night, really well. Very intense, good tempo to the play. Didn't take the couple of chances that fell our way. And in fairness to UCD, they made it difficult. But I think the eye won't be off the ball, really. It's very much focused on trying to win enough points to get the team back into Europe. And whatever personnel are put out every Friday, I'd be very, very confident that they do everything that they can to win enough matches and win enough points to get Pats back to Europe. So as well as that too, it's kind of coming towards the end of the season where there are a number of players who contracts are up, will have an opportunity to show whether they can come on board for the, you know, the next couple of years. And that's healthy, because we're not fizzling out the season in any shape or form. We're trying to push on and give the players the opportunity to get the club back to Europe.
Okay, checking the results in the Women's National League. Galway 5, Kilkenny United 0. Sav Doyle with 2, Lindsay McKee, Aoife Thompson and Tessa Mullins. Big win for Piemont United, 2-1 over Wexford Youths. Eleanor Ryan Doyle getting plenty of goals this season. She grabbed the winner, so Piemont closing in on the title. DLR Waves 2, Limerick 1, Catherine Cronin with the clincher there for DLR Waves. And a finish, Cork City 0, Shelburne 4, Noelle Murray with a hat-trick in that game. And Mia Dodd also scoring on her debut. Now, speaking of women's football, James, your hit of the week. We go up towards the Irish League and a women's player scoring a cracker of a goal. Tell us about it.
Oh, fantastic. In what was a very poor game up until that moment, Julie Nelson, Northern Irish international and Crusader striker player. I've been looking around this story, and allegedly she's practiced this in training, and one of her former managers didn't like her practice in training. So they try and hit the crossbar from the halfway line. So she gets a free kick and she goes for it. Pings it to the crossbar, hits the crossbar, comes back down, hits the goalkeeper in the head, goes in the goal. From just inside the other half.
But she's not aiming for the goal, she's aiming for the crossbar.
She aims for the crossbar, so it comes back off the crossbar. So it comes off the crossbar and hits the keeper in the back, rolls into the net. So it's an absolutely brilliant strike.
But it's an own goal.
it's technically an own goal, but the strike is
brilliant. I'm missing something here. Are you saying they're aiming for the crossbar?
They aim for the crossbar, they practice aiming for the crossbar.
But when you say it to hit it, that it bounces back in the plane, someone's going to run in and score. Ah, stop. Off, James,
it's brilliant. Have a look at the strike. It's absolutely brilliant.
Who's this manager that's letting her do this?
That's what I'm saying. They don't let her do it. So she absolutely smashed it. It's absolutely brilliant. And then keeping with women's, another hit was Eileen Gleeson, obviously being appointed as the assistant manager to the national team.
Yeah, well,
that's a great idea.
I don't want to dampen your positivity about the women's game, James, but there was a game in Cork yesterday.
This is my miss of the week.
Yeah, go for it, James.
Absolute shambles. When you look at what's happened this week in women's sport, particularly, we go back to being the GAA podcast, you look at the amount of people who turned up yesterday for the football finals. Absolutely fantastic to see the women's, the LGFA pumping it to make sure people get in the gates. 56,000, I think.
114, I think it was.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable crowds to go to it. And then you got the FAI not appointing enough officials to a women's national league game here in Ireland.
And it was the only game on yesterday.
It was the only game on, Cork City versus Shelburne, and they didn't even have enough people to run the line. It's an absolute farce. Noel Mooney might talk about being open and being answering questions on Twitter, etc., but to have not enough officials appointed to a top-level women's game in this country is a farce.
Alan Matthews, how can that happen in this day and age?
I can't believe that. It's absolutely shambolic. And, you know, clubs are asked to adhere to standards and protocol and procedures. And that is a basic requirement of any football match, that you have a referee. And in League of Ireland, you have an official group, a referee.
Two lines, and
a fourth official.
It's unbelievable. Nonsense. At this day and age. And that's just a terrible... Well, sorry, it's a reflection of where we are with the FAI. Yeah. It just continues to give... The association continues to give. It's talking about reinventing itself, having a look internally and fixing it. Here we are again. For a match yesterday, they can't provide officials. That's just
to not even, and last week not to provide an FAI representative for the draw of the biggest cup competition as well. And as you say, James, it's all right being on Twitter answering questions. Absolutely ridiculous. The proof will be in the pudding in terms of if we're ever going to move forward.
It's,
and
just,
the likes of this happening is an absolute
that is basic administration.
But you look at today, you look at the papers today, everything's going to be about the amount of people that went to watch the three GAA matches yesterday. Absolutely fantastic attendance in what was terrible weather, unbelievably shocking weather, and then we have this amateur error. The FAI is a professional organisation.
Someone has to be accountable for that, James. Someone has got
Somebody
to be held
to put
accountable
their hand up and
for
go,
that.
That's right? Me. That's it's absolute. It really, really boils my blood when you see this. We're not trying to promote. We shouldn't need to promote women's football. If it's there, people will want to go and watch it.
But there
but
you
for
go.
For our own organisation.
No, but you have to try and improve standards for them. Like, you look at the stuff, and I know, again, it's not comparing like with like, but you look at the stuff going on with the Women's National League in England. They had games last week in the Etihad. There was 35,000
Stamford
Bridge, Chelsea and Spurs. There was 35,000. I know they've larger resources, all that stuff. I'm not trying to compare them, but I'm saying there has to be a standard set if you're ever going to improve things here with the women's game as well. And it's an insult to the women and the girls involved that they don't even have referees going to the matches. It's an absolute disgrace.
Who are appointed by the association. Yeah. It's not as if they're appointed from a third party. These are appointed from internally, from the association.
Yeah. I think it was a lineswoman that was missing. Yeah,
it was. But even at that, like, it's nonsense. It is complete and utter nonsense that happens.
It's unforgivable.
You said, one game yesterday. It's not as if there was a full list fixture.
But there's no excuse.
There's no excuse.
There's no excuse.
No.
Even if there's 20 games on, there's no excuse.
Absolutely no excuse.
It's coming off the back of the Women's World Cup, you know, and that's the biggest chance to really promote the game. You know, you see in England how well they've got behind it. You know, this is the time when they really should be pushing it and promoting it.
And there is a real feel-good factor around the Women's National Team, as we saw with the recent match against Montenegro.
Yeah.
There are four matches this weekend. Shells against Galway, this is on Saturday at the AUL Complex. 2 o'clock kickoff. DLR Waves against Cork City. Jackson Park at 7 o'clock. And then two matches on Sunday. Kilkenny United against Piemont at the Watershed, 2 p.m. And also a 2 o'clock start for Limerick against Wexford Youths at the Markets Field. That one kicks off at 2 p.m. Rob, we didn't get your hit of the week yet.
My hit of the week was Sean Maguire. He had a great game for Preston, scored after 4 minutes of the weekend, and this is coming off the back of missing the international window with that bizarre injury. I'm sure everyone knows about it now, but he got a smack of the ball in the face that led to a small perforation of his eyeball. So the pressure in his eyeball was double what it should be. He couldn't move his head for 2 weeks or something. So he did really well. Preston are doing really well. They're in the playoff places, 3 points off top. They've just lost one game all season and times are good there.
Alan Matthews, he needs to do well to remind Mick McCarthy about his qualities, doesn't he?
He certainly does, yeah. And scoring goals for Preston at that end of the table will certainly help him. He's a good player, Sean. He's never really been able to get a good run of games in Preston because of his hamstrings more than other injuries. He seems to have an issue with that. But he's a goal scorer, and if he can do that, I'd certainly see him playing and making a good contribution for Mick McCarthy. We don't have too many guys who are playing at top-end level, and particularly guys who are scoring goals. That might change, and certainly that's a good start for him.
And your thoughts on Jack Byrne against Bulgaria?
Very good. Really good. I dampened it down a little bit in relation to some of people suggested he's the next Wesley Houlihan, you know. He's a really good player. And when he got on the ball and opened things up and passed and moved it, he looked the part. I think he needs to probably, from Mick McCarthy's point of view, try and do that on a more consistent basis for Rovers if he can, and maybe take a move back to the UK before he gets him into the team. I can't see him playing him from Rovers. I could see him playing him if he moves across. But he was really, really good. He's a smashing footballer. And if he has a strong finish to the season with Rovers, pushes them on in the league, maybe gets them to a cup final. Sorry about that, Adrian. But he could have a really, really strong finish which could get him into the actual squad. I think he deserves to be in the squad. But getting into the team, I would imagine Mick McCarthy would probably need to see him playing at a higher level than Rovers.
And Al, so many people urging caution when it comes to Troy Parrott. I know you're on Saturday Sport at the weekend, and Pochettino, the Tottenham manager, Maurizio Pochettino, suggesting that people need to show a degree of patience when it comes to Troy Parrott. And you'd agree with that?
Absolutely, yeah. I watched him last week for the first time to see him in the flesh against Armenia, and he didn't blow me away by any means, Adrian, to be honest with you. Obviously there's a lot of talk and a lot of hype. Now, he scored the winning goal and he obviously looks a good player, and I wouldn't be judging him on one game. He's obviously a huge talent, but I think with Pochettino he's in the right place in terms of a manager who will look after him, and as you say, dampen down any of the hype. That and the hype will grow, because in fairness to him, he went away obviously with Sweden, and Stephen Kenny didn't play him from the start. He brought him on. He obviously contributed hugely with two great goals. So we all know the young fella has massive potential, but to be throwing him, I suppose, suggestions of into the Euros and into the squad and should Mick McCarthy play him, all this, I'd leave all that talk for now. Just let the young fella develop. And from what I've heard as well from people who have dealt with him, he's supposed to be a really good kid with his head well screwed on as well, which is a good thing to hear, because sometimes, even going back to comparing with maybe with the likes of Jack Byrne, there was a lot of hype around Jack as well, and maybe he got things too soon and that might have affected him and his career. So that just goes to show you that things can be affected on the playing side if all is not right off the pitch. But I think, to be fair to Jack as well, he's come back here, he's rejuvenated himself, he looks a lot fitter. I've watched him loads with Shamrock Rovers and he's been outstanding in a lot of the games, and whether it's a popular opinion or not, he's better than this league here, to be honest with you, Adrian. He's a much better player, and he proved that last week. And like Alan says, I think last week did for him was the game against Switzerland. He was obviously left out of the 23. I think the game against Bulgaria, coming on playing so well, has probably got him into the squad for the next game, but he's still a good way off playing in the mixed first team.
Okay, all right. Alan Matthews, some sad news over the weekend. A former League of Ireland player, Noel Melvin, passing away. And Noel was a player and a person you knew very well.
He certainly was, Adrian, and it's really, really shocking news to hear yesterday that Noel died suddenly. Yeah, you're right. I worked with Noel. He's a colleague of mine at the bank, and I would have played against him numerous times. He played for Finn Harps, Monaghan and Dundalk, and tragically, he passed away yesterday suddenly at 48 years of age. And I think I speak for everybody in football when I say our thoughts and condolences are with his wife, Cathy, and his two kids, Mark and Sophie. A great fella, well-liked, respected as a footballer, and as a work colleague, totally and utterly respected, a gentleman. And a tragic loss to his family, and just a very, 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 very sad morning to go into work today, and people are quite numb about his passing. And just from a football point of view, he contributed an awful lot to all those clubs that he played for. He's a season ticket holder up in Dundalk. And it's just so, so sad. So as I say, my thoughts, and I think I speak for a lot of people in football and in the bank, who say our condolences and prayers are with his wife, Cathy, and two children. May you rest in peace.
Well said. Sympathies to his family. Lads, before we wrap things up, we'll just have a quick check on the fixtures this coming Friday night in the Premier Division. It's Cork City against Finn Harps. James O'Toole, we were talking last week about possibly Finn Harps pulling it out of the bag. That defeat at the Showground certainly was a real dampener for them. They're going to Cork City, 7 points between the sides. Still a big ask for Finn Harps to reel in Cork, isn't it?
It's a massive ask. I think now at the moment, I think what Ollie's going to be looking at is get a bit of form ahead of a playoff. And as we mentioned earlier, they should have the upper hand in the playoff because they're actually going to be playing matches that mean something for them. So I think that's where Ollie's probably going to be looking at now. He'll obviously be in the stand watching it from there, and it'll be down to the calm, patient Hegarty to look after the team.
And Rob, your beloved Shamrock Rovers taking on St. Pat's at Tallaght Stadium, 8 o'clock kickoff on Friday night. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it'd be nice to stop them getting too close to Europe. I think the league has gone really.
Get off that fence. Go on.
I think the league has gone for Rovers now. The focus should be on the cup. I think it probably will be, but it's a game you'd expect Rovers to win, and I think they'd be expecting to win themselves.
Yeah, Dundalk back in Waterford. Daniel Kelly scored a hat-trick in the cup there just over a week or so ago. Waterford against Dundalk is the live game on RT2 television on Friday night soccer, 7:45 kickoff. UCD taking on Sligo Rovers. And Alan Colley, Derry City against Bowes. That's a biggie as well at the Brandywell. Derry can leapfrog Bowes into third place. They also have a game in hand, so it's a mighty big game for both clubs.
Yeah, that's a massive game. Probably the game of the night, Adrian. And to be fair, as we mentioned earlier on, Declan Devine's done a marvellous job. I know he'll be very disappointed, obviously not winning the cup the other night, but he'll be very proud of the players as well, the way they've performed, not just in that game, all season. And they're really rowing in behind him, and the crowd as well. As I said, there's a feel-good factor about, because it was always one of the hardest places to go, to Brandywell, and I think Declan has certainly brought that back. And then looking at Bowes, even watching them in the night, I know they had a lot of changes, but if you go back to their form in the early part of the season compared to since the break, that's 10 games they've played now, and they've only won 3, Adrian. They've drawn 3 and lost 4 as well. So they're not playing anywhere near the level that they were playing in the early part of the season, and they're almost stumbling across the line. Now, I think they do deserve Europe, and I hope to get it for the way they've played all season, but they're certainly stumbling the last few weeks. And if you're looking at it right now, the in-form team, I suppose, going into it, you'd have to say Derry are probably in a better position to maybe overtake them and get that third place. But I still think fourth may get them Europe as well. So, but I would fancy Derry to win Friday night.
Yeah. Would you, James? It's important they bounce back after the obvious disappointment of losing the EA Sports Cup final.
Of course, I think they'll win it. Not being biased at all. But I think the big one for Derry is if Derry get over Bowes and Rovers beat Pats, it gives them a bit of a gap between Pats as well. So that's the big thing that Declan will be looking at. Because as Alan said, it has been for, I think, the last 5 years, fourth place has got it. Last year, fifth place got Europe. So fourth place is something you definitely need to secure in your mentality needs to be that anyway. But a win on Friday night, and I think Derry will wrap up the third spot.
Yeah, just a final question, Alan Matthews, the season, because we will, of course, review the season in a few weeks' time. But your overall thoughts on the season, has it been good, or what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I would think it has. I've seen an awful lot of matches. Dundalk, I think, will win the league. Rovers have certainly challenged them really well. Derry, the resurgence of Derry under Declan has been a very, very good positive. And then you've got Bowes, who've been consistently up the top end of the table. Somewhat, I suppose, shooting above and punching above their weight, but hanging in there. From a Pats point of view, we've been somewhat inconsistent, and that's reflective of the league position that we're in. Cork, I think we would have expected them to do better, and I think that's the main surprise. But I think Rovers have really put it up to Dundalk. Dundalk have shown their mettle and been very, very consistent, and they've been able to play good football and get positive results. I think the standard of play has been quite good. The tempo and the fitness of some of the teams have been really exceptional. And overall, I think it's been a good league. You've Finn Harp still scrapping to stay in the division, probably going to get into a playoff spot. And they've put it up to a number of teams. UCD, whilst they're at the bottom of the table, they've had a couple of decent results early on. They lost an awful lot of players. It's very difficult for them to stay put. So I think there's been, again, it's a change of guard, if you like, between Cork drifting away and Rovers coming in. But you have, I would like to think, Pats, Derry and Bowes all looking to challenge and mount challenges for next year. So I think it's been a decent season. It's not over yet. The Cup semi-finals will be quite exciting, I would imagine. They may not all go to plan. So it'll be interesting to see, but certainly it's been positive.
OK. All right, the matches in the First Division all being played on Saturday night, the final round of matches. And it should be a big, big night at Tulke Park. Shelburne taking on Limerick. They'll be crowned champions and presented with a trophy on the night. Wexford against Cabinteely. Athlone against Galway United. Bray against Drogheda United. And Cove Ramblers against Longford Town. All those games kicking off at 7:45. Lads, we leave it there. Thanks to Alan Matthews, also to Alan Cawley, Rob Wright and James O'Toole. Until the next edition, bye for now.